You can see the U.S. women's national team playing their first match since the Olympics when they take on Paraguay in the first of a two-match set tomorrow, 7:30 Eastern on ESPN2 and the ESPN app. One app, one tap. And with that, we welcome you back to a spirited morning here on Get Up, coming to you live, as always, from above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17. Ninko, Kmart, Dominique Foxworth, David Pollack with us. We got Paul and Heather coming up as well. We're jam-packed. Let's go. Roll it. We got time to get up here because we've got to talk about the Green Bay Packers. They're picking up the pieces of an epic opening disaster. You'll hear exactly how Aaron is handling it and one of his former teammates with some criticism coming up off the top and then to Dallas. Off its opener. Now another tough test. We'll tell you the one change they must make for their must-win this week. And then you will hear a voice you trust say the Bears have it right. Leave Justin Fields on the bench. We're talking about it as we get up with you, starting right now with Aaron Rodgers. Look, clearly not his normal self week one against New Orleans, throwing for 133 yards, his third career game with no passing touchdowns and multiple interceptions. So it was a disaster, and one of those picks came in the red zone on a throw that was behind Devontae Adams in the third quarter. It's worth noting, Rodgers did not throw a red zone interception all of last season. And then the Packers finished the day with just 3 points, just the third time Green Bay has scored that few in any game started by Rodgers, who paid his normal visit to our buddy Pat McAfee's show yesterday and had this to say.
The few text messages that I did get went something like this. Hey, there was a team that lost 38-3 last year to the Saints that won the Super Bowl. It's like, oh, okay, thanks for that. Well, I don't know what kind of lining that is. You just, like, you know, trying to make chicken salad out of chicken. But might be a freak out outside of the facility. I think it's just a, you know, it's a good learning lesson for us. You know, we can't play like that. We can't start a game like that. Look, there's not much to say. We got our asses beat. We're all frustrated about it, but you just move on. We got 16 more to go.
All right, so that is the usual R-E-L-A-X Aaron Rodgers. Meanwhile, as I promised, JerMichael Finley, who was Rodgers' teammate, former tight end for the Packers, was on ESPN Radio this morning with KJM, and he had some fascinating comments about his former quarterback. Listen to this.
I just don't see a work ethic in Aaron Rodgers that I have in previous years. He's a quarterback that doesn't never take blame for himself. He's that guy, if I throw the ball to the receiver, he's got to catch it wherever it's at. He's not a guy, if you go into the film room and he made a bad pass, he's not that guy that's going to raise his hand and say, oh, that's my bad. He's going to make sure that the coaches know that that's all on you.
There's a few things to unpack there. And again, I don't know if there is a history of some sort of beef there or an axe to grind, but whatever it is, JerMichael Finley played with him, and this is his perspective.
There.
So what'd you say, David?
I said, there's something there. Good Lord. That dude, Aaron Rodgers made his career. I mean, threw him touchdowns, gave him a career, and that dude just said, man, I'm going to go snatch your soul and let people know you ain't that guy. You don't take blame. I mean, I know, listen, this is an off season where people, I'm not going to lie, guys. I watch Get Up almost every morning. I was exhausted hearing about Aaron Rodgers. So I'm sure everybody else in the world is. Just, it's been beat upside your head so long, and now the story is a little bit different. He struggled, and we're not used to seeing that. So now the reaction is going to be, you know, is it because of the offseason and the selfishness and all this stuff? So interesting, JerMichael Finley definitely not holding back.
Yeah, so let's analyze the two specific things he said. First of all, the idea about not having the same work ethic that he used to. Aaron acknowledged he contemplated retiring during this offseason. He acknowledged that he has found pleasure in all sorts of other things, found joy in his life he didn't see before. He's in a relationship now. He hosted Jeopardy, as you pointed out. Like, does that, when a player sort of glimpses his own professional mortality like that, is it easy to turn the page back?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I can't climb into Aaron Rodgers' head, but I feel like it's all going to be kind of results dependent for us, because if he came out and thrown six touchdowns, we would have said that his glimpse at mortality has recharged him, and this offseason is he's on a
rinse.
No, so I'm just saying, this was one game. If he'd have had this game this week and had four touchdown ground week one, we wouldn't be saying these things. So I think this is part of the overreaction. But the JerMichael Finley stuff, like, that speaks to me more than anything else, because that scares me for this team. Because when you have relationships, interpersonal relationships with people, you build up some type of goodwill when it's a positive relationship. And that can carry you through some bad times. What it sounds like to me, JerMichael Finley's not the first one of Aaron Rodgers' former teammates to come out and say negative things about him. So what that makes me fear that if this season goes bad, they go 0-2. They go 0-3. He doesn't have the goodwill amongst his teammates. It suggests to me that things could go bad quickly with the way that this team interacts with each other.
What do you think, Kayman?
Well, JerMichael Finley mentioned, you know, the work ethic over the last few years. The guy's the reigning MVP. Like, what's the issue with the work ethic? I understand this particular offseason, but what about last year? He looked just fine to us, right? When we were talking about all these, the whole offseason drama, it was mentioned, teammates, the longer this saga drags on and if Rodgers is going to come back, teammates, could they potentially get frustrated with having to answer these questions? Well, he did show up. But Aaron spent all offseason away from this team, and when he did come back, he had a whole list, as long as this rundown of, and I have beef with you, and this is why I don't like you. So he did all of that. To do that, we all accepted and we're fine right with it. Except now, you need to show up. But you need to play like Aaron Rodgers.
That list of grievances, it was so pro-player. Like, that had to go over well in the locker room.
Yes.
Because what he was doing is calling out the organization and standing up for guys who were there and guys who weren't there in the past. So, like, that to me speaks to Aaron Rodgers having a good relationship with his guys. But then the JerMichael Finley stuff, like, that is more concerning than anything else.
Look, there is nothing more tested and tried and true than all of the labor getting together and you know, being upset with the management. I mean, it works that way.
It works.
Practically everything. And it did. David, I'll give you the final word. What is your expectation? They played Detroit on Monday night. The Lions, terrible first half, much better second half last week. What is your expectation for where this thing goes from here?
I think it'll turn around quickly. But, you know, one thing about Aaron's personality, like when you're that guy and you're confident and you're not really worried about other people and you're doing your thing, everybody, Dominique can tell you this, everybody in the locker room will absolutely 100% put it up with it when you're balling. When you're not balling and when you have some issue, now we're going to have some conversations because, you know, Coach Saban says it all the time. I've always heard people talk about it. When you're not committed or when you're not all in and you're not doing and you're making plays, you can stick around probably for a little while. But when you ain't making plays and you're not that guy, it becomes more of a deal in the locker room.
David, remind us, were you drafted the same way as Aaron Rodgers?
He was drafted ahead of Aaron Rodgers.
Who was drafted first,
four or five picks ahead of him, maybe? Maybe?
You know, he just managed to accidentally throw that in earlier in the program today, and we all enjoyed the way he slid that in. All right, next stop is Dallas and Dak Prescott and the Cowboys. A really interesting game this weekend. They're going to L.A. to take on the Chargers. Dak coming off a monster performance week one, 400 yards plus, three touchdowns, in what was a loss to Tampa that felt a lot like a win, but not, if I may, for those of us who have Zeke Elliott on our fantasy team. Dak might have gotten off to a great start, but his backfield mate had 11 carries for 33 rushing yards against the Buccaneers, among the fewest of his Cowboys career. And so let me come here and let me come to you, Nico, to start this, because again, asking for a friend, but if you happen to have taken Zeke Elliott with the eighth pick in your fantasy draft this year and then watched that, please tell me that's not what the Cowboys' offense is going to look like going forward this season.
It's not. It's not. They were going against one of the best defensive fronts in football now. So if you're a smart offensive coordinator, are you just going to pound the ball in there and try and run the ball when you know you're against a great front? No, that wouldn't be the smart thing to do. What are you going to do? You're going to put it in your quarterback's hands. You're going to throw for over 400 yards, and you're going to be competitive till the end of the game. So I have no issues with them not having Zach Martin on the field. They didn't play in this game. So one of your best offensive linemen is not in that football game. So they were trying to game plan accordingly because they were playing a great defense. Moving forward, I do not anticipate this being a common trend.
Ryan Clark, the morning after that game, pointed out one particular play. Again, Zeke had very little work in that game, but one particular play where he had one guy to beat and would have scored a touchdown and couldn't beat him, and made the comment that there was a time when Zeke Elliott beat that guy with his eyes closed. Right. What is your expectation for Zeke bounce back this week?
I mean, I think we can say this is one game if we want to, but we can also look back at last year. Mm-hmm. Like, this offense, they transitioned a couple years ago from being a Zeke-based offense to a Dak-based offense. I think the most important thing that Zeke can do is, and he is great at pass pro. Mm-hmm. Keep doing that. Mm-hmm. Keep doing that, and maybe get out in a route every now and then, because the league in general is not moving to a run-based system. Like, those outside of New England and Baltimore, like, everyone else has to throw the ball, and Zeke is not going to be the football.
But fantasy people did not draft
him. Did you not hear the fantasy people?
And Jerry Jones didn't pay him for that.
But that's true. That's true.
Much more seriously.
True. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of running backs who are great in pass pro, right? Mm-hmm. And you don't have to pay them tens of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
So that's not what they're expecting from Zeke Elliott, right?
It may not be what Jerry was expecting, but it's clearly what Kellen Moore, the offensive coordinator, was expecting. If you look at their game plans from before Dak got hurt last year, and you look at this one coming up, and Vita Vea is a problem on that front. Like, I understand this is not the game to pound Zeke up the middle, but it doesn't seem like any game has been as long as Dak has been healthy.
So Kellen Moore called 28 run plays, and Dak checked out of 12 of them because Dak saw a different opportunity and said, let's go there, mm-hmm. right? Okay, but Kellen Moore has said, we need Zeke to pound it. And I've said on the show, my name for those two is Deke. Like, those two together, like, I don't think Dak is successful, the Cowboys are successful if, now I'm confused.
Zeke.
Okay. All right, guys. Okay. Yeah, like, this team needs Zeke. And the last two times they've been to the playoffs since he was drafted, Zeke led the league in rushing.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying he has to do that this year, but that just shows the importance. I think there needs to be some more of a balance.
Go ahead, Nick.
I would say balance is vital. Mm-hmm. So once you lose that balance of being able to run the football and you're just one-dimensional, then you put yourself in a bad spot because other teams are watching that. But I don't think this is the case in this particular situation. I think that they game planned accordingly because they're playing Tampa.
Right.
Well, that's a great note, by the way, from Kmart, that they checked out of so many of those. Let's sort of leave it on this question for you, Dominique. This was an offense that ran through Zeke when it was at its best at that point. Clearly, that's no longer going to be the case. Dak has emerged as a true NFL superstar. But do they need to have much more from Zeke than they had in week one if they're going to be a legit threat this year?
Yeah, I think they absolutely need to have some production from Zeke. But they're filled with talent on that roster. It's not like Dak's rookie year when it was like Zeke and they needed a big receiver.
Right.
But now they have
They've got
three receivers that could be number one. So I'm not sure that Zeke needs to be as big a role as he has had.
If they become that kind of one-dimensional, then some of us may have to be perusing the waiver wire awfully soon. In the meantime, coming up, are the Saints actually better off with Jameis instead of Drew Brees? Can they shock Tampa Tom and the NFC South? We're answering those questions. And the calls for Justin Fields to start are growing louder by the day. But one member of our crew says, not so fast, my friends, and he will explain why. Plus, we're asking you for your response today. The poll question on my Twitter page, which of these traditional powerhouses will be the first to make the college football playoff? You see the options. It's at ESPN Greeny on Twitter. Back in a flash. Get up on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than 1 rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Rolling on another edition of Real or Ridiculous. I will make a strong statement and you'll tell me if it's real or ridiculous. Kimberly, the Ravens are going to miss the playoffs. Is that real or ridiculous?
Greeny, I'm going to say ridiculous because you can tell me, you can give me numbers about their passing attack, how many guys are injured. But you know what? I don't need numbers when I have eyeballs. And my eyes tell me that Lamar Jackson, he's legit. If you have him, you always have a chance. Same way if Justin Fields can obscure some of the Chicago Bears issues, Lamar can do the same for the Ravens.
Okay, so that one's ridiculous. Pollock, let me come to you. You covered Urban Meyer in college for years. But someone said Urban Meyer is going to be one and done in the NFL. Is that real or ridiculous?
I think it's ridiculous. I get it. Obviously, with USC coming open, a name that he's been linked with that job for a while. But, man, he's making a lot of cheddar, a new challenge. I don't foresee him leaving after 1 year, but Nick Saban left after two and went to Alabama and it worked out all right for him.
Absolutely. There's a long history of these college coaches going back. We'll see what happens. Meanwhile, Nick, I'll come to you. If I were to say the Saints are better off with Jameis at quarterback than Drew Brees last year, would that be real or ridiculous?
Oh, yeah. The Drew Brees last year, that's absolutely real. I think that Jameis Winston is in shape, and I saw him with the ability to run the ball, which I've never really seen him do before. But more important than all that is he has the ability to threaten a deep pass. That scares the heck out of defenses. It forces you to play the entire field. Drew Brees last season, that right there, Drew Brees wasn't doing that too often last year. And Jameis Winston, even if he doesn't do it every game, the fact that teams know that he can do it, it makes it so much easier for Kamara and the rest of those offensive weapons they have.
See, this is where these takes get so complicated because people will take that and they'll say, Dominique Foxworth says Jameis Winston is better than Drew Brees, which no one in their right mind is going to say. Drew Brees is one of the handful of greatest quarterbacks of all time. But very specifically, David, at the end, when Brees had clearly just lost so much of his arm strength, do you believe that right now this offense is better with Jameis running it?
Yes, I do too. I do as well. I agree with Dominic. But it's again, we think of Drew Brees and we think of his prolonged career. The last several years, it became different. And you saw it. It was his ability to stretch the field. Listen, was he still pinpoint accurate? Yeah, but it was in short windows, in short space. By the way, Drew Brees even said that about himself the other night on the broadcast. Mm-hmm. He was like, Jameis Winston can take shots deep that I can't do. So mentally, he's not near as sharp as Drew Brees. Can he become what Sean Payton wants as a replacement? He's going to have every opportunity. Obviously, getting Thomas back in a couple weeks, get better at the wide receiver spot, it's going to make him even better. But his arm strength, his ability to push it down the field, Sean Payton being able to do some fun things he hadn't been able to do in several years.
Well, Kmart, I mean, it's hard to say there was a more impressive performance week one than the Saints with what they did to the Packers. And again, New Orleans, it was a home game, but they weren't playing at home. There were more Packer fans there than there were Saints fans in that stadium. Is this a team that is going to make the playoffs this year? Is this a team that is going to make Tampa Tom sweat in the NFC South?
Make them sweat? No, I don't think Tampa Tom is sweating about anybody. But I do think if Jameis continues on this sort of trajectory, not that he has to throw for 5 touchdowns and no interceptions every week, but if he can eliminate turnovers, because that's been the Achilles heel for him. And that's what makes me concerned when I think of Jameis and want to project what he can be, because the projections are based off of what we've seen, and we've seen 30 interceptions. But the way they're set up,
I mean, the regular season last year, the Saints beat the Bucs twice.
Yeah.
They outplayed them.
In the playoffs, too.
They outplayed them and breezed through three interceptions in that game. So who is to say the Saints are not absolutely a threat to Tampa in that division?
I certainly think they're a threat to Tampa. The argument to say that they are not a threat is that Tampa is better this year than they were at any point last year, even in the playoffs last year, which I understand that, but I don't know that I believe that, especially after what we saw the Saints do in week one. I think the Saints in Tampa, I think that division is going to be a fight unless Jameis reverts back to the Jameis.
Which is the
old.
Unless.
I mean, that's the big unknown with him. But if not now, then when? We said it all through the offseason. So far, so good. Meanwhile, we have a brand new feature here that we're going to call Caesars Says. Because if there's one thing that you can't help but notice, it's that whatever we think we know, Vegas always knows more. So there are a few lines that I saw that kind of stood out to me. So Kansas City is a 3.5-point favorite in Baltimore, against Baltimore this weekend at Baltimore. If this line holds, it would be the most points Baltimore has given in a home game ever with Lamar Jackson as their starting quarterback. So, Dominique, what they're saying is the Chiefs are a touchdown better than the Ravens are. Do you buy that?
I do. I wish I didn't have to, but I do. Last year, they went into Baltimore and beat them in a primetime game by 2 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. And this year, I would say that the Ravens are weaker because we talked about the injury issues that they have, particularly in the worst possible place you can have injuries against the Chiefs is in the secondary. So, yeah, I think that saying that the Chiefs are a touchdown better than the Ravens, that sounds about reasonable. It doesn't mean the Ravens can't win, but going into this game, it's a bad, bad matchup.
And a bad time for it to come on a short week after playing a West Coast game. Nico, the next one that jumped out at me is Buffalo and the Jets. Buffalo is a 3.5-point favorite in Miami. Excuse me, Buffalo and the Dolphins, a 3.5-point favorite in Miami this weekend and looking to avoid going 0-2 with Josh Allen as their starter. Buffalo is 20-4 straight up as a favorite. So, again, on the road, Rob Ninkovich, let me come to you on this. Essentially, what they're telling you is that the Bills are a touchdown better than the Dolphins. Do you buy that?
No, I'd pump the brakes on that one. Look, Josh Allen didn't break 300 yards in his week one matchup. He threw the ball 51 times. So if you think about that, they had 11 drives. They only scored one touchdown. They kicked 3 field goals. So for them to cover that, they're going to have to score more points, put more points up on the board. In Miami, they're an opportunistic defense. They get the ball off of their opponents. And so I think Miami's going to give them a game. It's going to be tough, especially down in Miami. It's always hard to play down there. The humidity is high.
Yeah, the first two their first two games seems to point in a different direction. One more that jumped out at me, and David Pollack, I'll throw this one at you. Everyone, of course, talking about Dallas. They're a 3-point underdog at L.A. this weekend at Caesars. They're looking to avoid their first 0-2 start since 2010. So essentially, and the Chargers are an interesting team there, what they're telling us is the Cowboys and Chargers are dead even in your mind, because these are kind of sexy picks for a lot of people. Which is the better football team, the Cowboys or the Chargers?
The Chargers. I think the Chargers are a better football team, a more complete football team. But the problem is, if you look at the schedule and you look at where the Chargers, they got to play the Chiefs a couple times. They got to play the Raiders a couple times. Dallas, it's really good. I get to play Washington twice and the Giants twice. I mean, I get to play the Eagles twice. Like, I don't know the Chargers will have a better record at the end of the season because their crossovers are Steelers and Browns and a tough schedule, but the Cowboys play in a better division. I think Cowboys long-term will be better, but I think the Chargers are a better football team.
Nice, well said. I'm always fascinated by those lines, and I've said it before, I'll say it again. You see all those big buildings they have in Las Vegas? Those aren't built because they get these things wrong. So we will continue to keep an eye on these for you as we go. Meanwhile, coming up here, you're going to hear a voice that you trust say, the Bears have it right. Leave Justin Fields on the bench. And that will no doubt lead to a debate, and we will have it. And also, we've got sneaky Hembo time, and here we go. Hembo is coming straight out. What was the last FBS team to go undefeated in consecutive seasons, which Alabama is aiming to do right now? David Pollack will take his shot at this one next. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more.
Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We are back on Get Up, and our next stop is Chicago, where the Bears are sticking with Andy Dalton as their QB1 despite a week one loss in L.A. Justin Fields played three snaps in that game, completing two passes and running in a touchdown. Would those snaps increase? We'll see. Dalton's total QBR of 35 and his 4.3 air yards per attempt were outside the top 20 among all starting quarterbacks over the weekend. He was also one of five to not throw a touchdown pass. And, you know, David Pollack, to pick up the conversation where we were earlier this morning, you was one who covered every game that Justin Fields played in college. You were one who told me before the draft, he's a player who's going to take some time to develop. Having seen what we've seen, where, if you were making the decisions, where would you be right now on getting Justin Fields on the field?
I like that he got him on the field this past week. He got him some reps. I would continue to do that and continue to work him in, but I'm not ready to give him the starting quarterback spot. Andy Dalton, he wasn't phenomenal, but he did what he's going to do. He's going to get the ball out of his hands really quickly. It's going to be underneath passing a game, underneath passing tech. It's not going to be dynamic by any stretch. They also, I don't think, protect him in the passing game exceptionally well. But listen, in the preseason, when everything is very vanilla, right? Everything is, all the defense is not put in. You're not doing all your stuff. In the preseason, Justin Fields held the ball 3.3 seconds a throw. Like, that's the preseason. You saw him get his head knocked off by the Buffalo, not seeing a free rusher, not accounting for that. Like, he's not ready yet to come in here and make all the decisions with protections and go through his progressions. It's going to continue to take him time. Do I want to see him more? Absolutely. Is he ready to be the starting quarterback and me to go win football games? He's not ready to be that guy yet.
So you know, Dominique, as I know this is something with which you disagree, and almost everyone I know disagrees, but here is an interesting part of this, because you earlier today said everyone's got strengths and weaknesses, play to his strengths and play away from the weaknesses, which makes sense in all cases. But I'm thinking about that offense, and that's exactly what they didn't ever do with right. Mitch Trubisky, yeah. who had similar strengths and weaknesses, and they never gave us any reason to believe they wanted to do that. I wonder if it is the offense that more than anything else is the problem here.
Maybe. If that's the problem and the coaches can't change that, then you need to find new coaches. But I'm going to move away from the debate on whether he should start or shouldn't start mm-hmm. based on his development. I'm going to defer to Matt Nagy and say that he knows more about quarterbacks than I do, and maybe Justin Fields isn't ready to play. But Matt Nagy has a bigger job than that. He has to manage that team. And if he does not have the credibility to tell them that Justin Fields shouldn't start, then he has the possibility of losing that team. And nothing about what Matt Nagy has done so far, very little, seems like he has that credibility in the locker room. So every week he puts Andy Dalton back out there, it makes it more and more difficult for him, in my opinion, to hold on to the morale of that locker room. So that's a whole nother problem that, frankly, I think is bigger mm-hmm. and harder to rectify than how you bring along your young quarterback.
For the record, yep. they played against a really good defense week one in the Rams. Let's see what it is this week against Dalton's old team, the Cincinnati Bengals. You know that there's some
things
there.
Maybe that's what it's about. He just wants Dalton to get his win
against the Bengals.
Then we'll see.
Nico, again, and the pride of Joliet, yeah. Illinois. So this, you bleed this deep in your soul. What do you think here?
You know how many text messages I had? Why aren't they putting the kid in? Why aren't they playing the young kid in? And listen, I come here on studio, I go past the Statue of Liberty. I know it's going to be there every time I come to New York, right? You know Andy Dalton is a statue in the pocket every single week.
They have
a terrible offensive line that cannot protect the quarterback. Uh-huh. So if I was the head coach, I would say, all right, we need to move the pocket here. We need to get the ball outside and move a little bit. You can't really do that with Andy Dalton. You know where he's going to be. If I was a defensive coordinator, I'd say, listen, we're going to break the pocket here. We're going to get inside on our rushes, and we are going to get to the spot because we know Andy Dalton is going to be 7 to 10 yards behind the center every time he throws the ball. And with his QBR after 1 week, if you're the head coach for the Bears, you might want to start looking at some boxes. You know, I'm moving into a new house in a couple weeks. I got a bunch of them. So if he keeps that up, He's not going to be there. I'm telling you. His job security is in question, especially with that defense that he has had for the last three years.
They've been good.
The motivation, too. You look at the defense on the defensive side of things, it's on us again.
Yeah.
We got to do this again. We got to score on defense every single week. That can be draining on a player.
Well, you continue to make, without necessarily meaning to, the point that I'm trying to make, which is, yeah, get him outside the pocket, do different things. That's not what they do.
Right.
He wasn't willing to do it with Mitch Trubisky. That's why he was dying to put Nick Foles on the field last year, even though everyone knew Trubisky was a more talented player. I think the system is part of the problem here. We'll see what they wind up doing. Let's see what they have this Sunday against Cincinnati. In the meantime, back to Sneaky Hembo. And Pollock, this one is for you. Alabama's trying to run the table in back-to-back seasons. What was the last FBS team to go unbeaten in consecutive years?
My mind immediately went to Miami because of the 01, 02 years, but they lost to Ohio State in the championship, so I'm going 90s. I'm going Nebraska.
Oh, he got it. That is
nice
correct.
Work.
Nebraska, 94 and 95. I can't tell you how much pleasure I take in Hembo going down on that. I don't know why, but I just love to see these come in right. Well done, David Pollock. In the meantime, as we head towards week three here, South Carolina at Georgia is one of the interesting games. Last time these teams met at Georgia was 2019, and South Carolina won that game in double overtime. Also in action, Auburn at number 10 Penn State. That's a fascinating game. Tigers seeking their first win over a ranked opponent since their season opener of last year. And then the big one this weekend is in Gainesville. Number 11 Florida hosting Alabama. The Crimson Tide's only game decided by single digits over the last two seasons was against Florida in the 2020 SEC Championship. And so with David here, let me bring Heather and Paul back into the conversation and start there. At a time in the sport where it feels like it's Alabama and then everybody else, you find places and say, well, maybe this is where they get a game. Maybe this is where they could lose. Paul Feinbaum, is this that place?
No, it is not. I'd love to give you a different answer one day just for the excitement of watching competition. But Alabama's not going down this weekend. And you know, this is one of the most dangerous arenas in college football, Greeny, but it doesn't matter to Alabama. They are that good, and Florida has some issues, especially trying to figure out which way to go at quarterback.
Heather, how about you? What do you think here again? I'm sure there are a lot of people trying to figure out, is there a spot to be tripped up and maybe this is it? What is your perspective on this game?
This is not it. I think Paul nailed it. And I have questions about Florida's quarterback situation as well. But I want to say that this doesn't mean that Alabama is invincible. Their remaining strength of schedule is number 7 in the country. I understand Texas A&M was in a dogfight against Colorado, but they have home field advantage later when those two teams play. So let's see what happens when Alabama's competition really increases and how they handle that. But yes, until proven otherwise, it's the Tide and everybody else.
All right, well, we'll see. I mean, competition increasing. They get Florida this week on the road. That has to be one of the tougher games that they have on their schedule. David Pollock, I'm not sure how this is possible, but their last three quarterbacks are all starters in the NFL, and this new one looks like the best of them all. Tell me, is Bryce Young going to wind up being the best quarterback Alabama's had in the last decade?
Wow. You say that, I say no. I can't give you that right away. I like Bryce Young. I like what he's done so far. He's got no INTs, which is great. 7 touchdowns. What he has, a lot of those guys had with Jalen Hurts and Tua, he's got a knack, man, to make plays. You can see he's got a lightning quick release. He can scramble outside the pocket, but always looking to throw. But my God, Greeny, we haven't even seen him challenged yet. We haven't even seen him in a big atmosphere. We haven't even seen him against a really good team. More importantly, even on the road. So I think, you know, this weekend will be a big test for him. Maybe face some adversity. Maybe have to make plays. You know, with in crucial situations. Let's see that before we start anointing him the best quarterback ever to play history of college football.
Well, let's see. I'm ready to anoint. I watched that game against Miami. I'm ready to do it. We'll see what he does this weekend against Florida. So, Mr. Feinbaum, let me come back to you. I've put the over-under right now on the number of SEC teams that are going to wind up in the college football playoff. If I put that over-under at 1.5, which way do you go?
I'm going over. I think it's going to be two because right now, and Heather can back this up better than I can, Alabama and Georgia really have a really nice path, and that's why that game against Clemson was so important for the Dogs. Yes, they do play Florida neutral site. They could, ultimately get Alabama in the SEC championship game. I slipped up and called that the national championship game. Mm-hmm. But that, it may not matter if they're both undefeated because I think they would both end up advancing to the playoffs.
All right, so those are the teams that are at the top. Heather, I then want to talk to you about teams that we're accustomed to seeing at the top. And we just heard the trivia question with David. Nebraska, of course, a traditional powerhouse in college football. So is USC, which fired their coach this week. Michigan is another one. So I wanted to ask the question, and it's on my poll question right now, with the news of Clay Helton's firing. Which of these legendary programs, USC, Texas, Michigan, or Nebraska, is going to be the next one to make it into the college football playoff? Actually, David, I'll start with you. Which one would you bet?
If I had to bet, I would go USC. And they're the only program, by the way, right now without a coach. But I look at that program, I look at the Pac-12, the history of that program. I think they'll always be able to have a ton of talent in the state, and I think they'll get it back, and I think they'll get a great coach, and I think they'll be in a position to be successful. Texas has Oklahoma, Nebraska, no shot. Michigan still has to go through Ohio State.
Heather Dinich, how about you? Of those four, which do you think will be the first one we eventually see someday in the college football playoff?
Well, Greeny, since you said someday, I'm going to go with Texas and pretend like the Arkansas loss didn't happen. And the reason I say Texas is because all of these teams need the playoff to expand in order to get in the college football playoff. And by the time that happens, Texas is going to be in the SEC. And, well, go ahead and just give them the benefit of the doubt like everybody else.
Okay, fair enough. Paul Feinbaum will like that thinking. How about you, Paul? Of those four programs, which one are you putting in?
Greeny, I'm not even sure Nebraska is ever going to have a winning season again, let alone win a national championship. But I think the answer is USC, for the reason that they have an easier path to the playoffs than Texas will in the SEC. By the time that happens, the expansion will help. But I really like Southern Cal.
And very quickly, I took Texas for the exact same reason as Heather. They're going to wind up in the SEC at some point. When in doubt, that's the direction in which I look. So that's what our crew thinks. Let's see what America thinks. I have the question up on my Twitter page, at ESPN Greeny. And the folks like Michigan. 42% of those who voted in my poll say Michigan, followed by SC, then Texas and Nebraska bringing up the rear. It is possible I have a disproportionate number of followers in the Midwest and in Big Ten country, but we will see. That is well done. Guys, outstanding. Thank you. And thanks, everybody, for voting. We'll keep that up through the radio today. As we continue, do you trust Baker Mayfield to take the Browns to a Super Bowl? The one thing preventing him from being great is next.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
We're back, and meanwhile on Planet Earth is brought to you by Whole Foods Market, and we discovered yesterday Dan Orlovsky has a hidden talent. Listen to this.
His ability to bark like a dog.
You want to hear it?
Yes, of course. All right.
Ready? That a lot.
Yeah, like that's what I mean. Like you really
work on that.
He's really working. Like that's the skill.
Wait. you know Mina really well. Yes. Is she the kind of person who would make that, like, is that a fake dog sound?
No, that's what's weird.
That is actually Dan making that noise? Yeah.
That is actually Dan. Dan is maniacal when it comes to his preparation for the show, and I imagine he's the same way when it comes to his voice work. He reminds me of the guy from Police Academy.
You know what? He's just at home, barking at himself. Yeah.
I want to hear Orlovsky's siren.
You know where he belongs? In the dog pound, in Cleveland. That's where we go next. Yeah. The Browns led for the majority of Sunday's game, which was played in Kansas City. But after a few critical mistakes, including a late pick from Baker Mayfield, they fell again in that opener. Yesterday, here on this program, Marcus Spears talked about holding Baker to an even higher standard. Listen.
When we talk about the Cleveland Browns now, which is great for the Cleveland Browns, it's in the context of the playoffs and the Super Bowl. And eventually, at some point, Baker Mayfield, like we've talked about with Lamar Jackson, is going to have to outduel 15. You're going to have the ball last and be able to make a game-winning or a game-scoring drive, because we know Pat Mahomes is going to do it.
Well, yes. So, again, Kmart, you covered that game. How did the Browns emerge feeling? And we talk about moral victories, that the Cowboys have a moral victory. And they went toe-to-toe with Kansas City and made the mistakes. How did they emerge feeling about their chances of beating them in the playoffs?
Oh, I mean, they're still confident. I mean, they were ticked off that they actually let that one get away, because for that whole game, the Browns were in control. Right. Baker was balling. And then it was the fourth quarter mistakes. That's when everything starts to compound. And that's when you see that little windows open and Patrick Mahomes does Patrick Mahomes things.
Neek, is Baker Mayfield good enough to get that team to the Super Bowl?
Yes, because that team is so good. Like, we talk about all the rest of the quarterbacks in the league, and we're like, hey, Dak's got to overcome that defense. Mm-hmm. Or Lamar Jackson has to overcome the injuries. And you say Patrick Mahomes has to overcome the defense. Baker doesn't have to overcome anything. The offensive line, incredible. Receiving core, incredible. Tight ends, incredible. Receivers, incredible. Defense got at least two all pros on it. Like, he is in a perfect situation. So, yes, he's good enough because that team is great.
I feel like, Nick, you've been one who continues to have questions about him. What are they?
Third down completion percentage. And I said that last year when they were in the playoffs, that they have to convert third downs. When you watch the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, they're 9-for-13 on third down. You have to be able to complete these balls, because in the playoffs, when it counts, it is one play. It is the fourth quarter where you have to be perfect and you can't make a mistake. So for Baker to be better this season, they can't be 2-for-7 on third down. They can't. And the coaches know that. Baker knows that. They look at the stats. They say, look, we got to convert on third down. And they went for it on fourth down. They were 3-for-4 on fourth down. But guess what? When you don't make it a fourth, it's a turnover.
Right.
When you fail on fourth down, that's just like throwing an interception or fumbling the ball away. It's a turnover.
To be clear, let's talk about why that matters. Third down is not just any other down, because usually the idea of having the play action and all that kind of stuff doesn't exist there. The stuff he's so effective using on first and second down. So I feel like that's what Nick is sort of saying here is, when they know he needs to throw it, when they know he needs to make a play, can he do it?
Yeah, I mean, that's the question. And Baker hasn't been able to do that consistently just yet. And maybe when you get Odell Beckham, the pass that he threw down to Fielder Schwartz, that'll get brought down and those guys will lift him up. But that is the problem. First down, second down, play action, you get a well-designed play. Baker is accurate as hell. But those big pressure situations, it's been rare to see him come through. And I think we're all right in expecting that in the playoffs, the quarterback's going to have to do that one or two times at the end of a game somewhere along the line. And we're not sure. I don't know that any of us believe that Baker is going to be able to do it.
Well, Baker, I think he would agree with everything everybody is saying at this table. He knows he needs to be better, especially because he's trying to get paid. He's trying to get the extension. And a lot of us between Josh Allen and Lamar and Baker, who do you think is going to get paid first? You know, there was a lot of hemming and hawing when it came to Baker for these reasons. Can you win the big game? Can you defeat a team like the Chiefs? This roster is stacked for him to do it. And I understand the third down criticism, but in this game, his big mistake was that interception with 69 seconds left. So as much as the third down percentages weren't where they needed to be, in this particular game, it was that one mistake.
And he's not the only one. I mean, yes, he made the big mistake, but the punter drops a snap and Nick Chubb fumbles.
Yes.
I mean, they gave They gave that game away.
Yeah.
I mean, there's almost no other way to say it. And people tend to do that against Patrick Mahomes because he puts a level of pressure on you. But they gave that game away.
That's the problem. They're never going to play a perfect game, though. Like, when we bring up these excuses for why people or explanations for why teams lost, they're going to make mistakes. No one's going to be perfect. This is going to happen, and you're going to have to find a way to overcome it.
You can't make those mistakes against that team, especially in that stadium. We'll see. You're looking for baseball? This is the place to watch it tonight. Series finale out west. Diamondbacks, Dodgers, L.A. still chasing the Giants. In the division. Our coverage starts 10 Eastern on ESPN and the app, One App, One Tap. Hey, First Take is coming up next, top of the hour. How concerned should we be about Aaron Rodgers week one? How much pressure is on Dak week two? Stephen A. debating with the big swagoo, top of the hour here on ESPN.